down. Buzzer beater, do it all now. All now. Top corner talking home run. Touchdown. Buzzer beater, do it all now. All now. Top corner like.
On today's episode, we've got rookies on pole, Penske's caught cheating, crashes, disasters, towering highs, and crushing lows. This is the Monday Report. Hello, everybody. It is Monday, May 16th, 2025, and this is the Monday Report. I'm your host, H. James K., and today we are going to be recapping Indianapolis 500 qualifying. Boy, oh boy, was it a crazy weekend full of crazy results, shocking results, cheating, crazy news stories, towering highs, crushing lows, and everything else that comes along with 2 days of the most intense qualifying in all of racing. So first of all, we got to start off with maybe the biggest story in IndyCar in the last decade. Robert Schwartzman, the rookie driver out of Israel via Russia, is on the pole for the Indianapolis 500. He is the first rookie since 1983 when Formula One driver Teo Fabi got the pole. More than just Robert Schwartzman, the team he's on, Prema, a rookie team that's brand new, is the first team to get on the pole in their rookie season since 1984 when Mayer Motor Racing got the pole with driver Tom Sneva. All in all, it's crazy. This was... Going into the week, I expected Robert Schwartzman to qualify 29th. I predicted that he would be safe from bumping, but he would be nowhere because his team had been hapless all year. The highest he did qualified all year was 18th. And then, all of a sudden, they're the fastest car in the world. And it's just so impressive. I was there at qualifying. It was the most spectacularly brave thing I've seen a driver do in a long time. Because Robert Schwartzman has never driven on an oval. Never been to the Indy 500. Prema has never driven on an oval. Until they came to Indianapolis. And it's one of these things where it kind of became clear during qualifying that, you know, Schwartzman, if he can keep it flat, he's really fast and he might be able to do this thing. To that point... Joseph Newgarden, just before the Fast 6, was jogging around the track. We'll get on to the reasons why he was doing that later. And he talked to the radio guys in Turn 3, and he even quipped that if Robert Schwartzman can keep it flat, he's going to get the pole. He said that an hour before Fast 6 qualifying, and he was right. Robert Schwartzman kept it flat, and he got on the pole. Starting off his run with a 233.163 mile per hour and gradually falling off from there over the next four laps. It was spectacular to watch. I had no words when it happened. It was just, everyone was like, oh, well, that was fast. Then by the time his run was over, everyone in the crowd was cheering for him. And we all wanted him to dodge those bullets. I'm a Pato diehard fan. And even I was like, I'm glad Schwartzman got the pole in that Pato because it's history. It's the kind of thing people are going to talk about Schwartzman getting the pole for years, even if he doesn't do well in the race. It's going to be one of these things that people just talk about. So it was crazy. It was absolutely spectacular. All right, moving on. Arguably a bigger story for the race is Team Penske. Cheater, cheater, pumpkin eater. Had a wife and couldn't keep her. Blah, blah, blah. Oh my God, the Penske's got caught cheating again. For the second year in a row, multiple Penske engineers will not be participating in the Indianapolis 500 because the number 2, driven by Joseph Newgarden, and the number 12, driven by Will Power, were caught with illegal modifications on their cars. So, to explain what happened, at the back of the car, there is what's called the attenuator. It is the piece of carbon fiber that acts not only as a buffer for wall impacts, but it's where the rear wing is attached. The attenuator is attached to the gearbox. And there is a seam along the attachment point between the gearbox and the attenuator. Now, in the rules, it's like section 14, subsection something, 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 something. You are not allowed to modify that seal, that seam in any way. It is not allowed, but the number 2 and the number 12 had a sort of Bondo-like sealant material that was like quick-setting carbon fiber mixture that had been put into that seal to close it off and smooth it out to reduce drag. Now, the 12 got through tech without this being spotted, but the number 2, driven by New Garden, didn't get through tech. It got through tech a little bit, but as it was being wheeled away, someone spotted it and double-checked, and per Doug Bowles, president of IndyCar and president of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the number 2 was brought back into tech and re-examined, and this fault was seen, and then the 12 was brought back and checked, and it too had this fault, and both cars were somehow allowed to get on the grid for qualifying. And then they were seen using angle grinders to, like, grind off the sealant to somehow make the cars compliant. But doing that modification in the pit lane is itself illegal. You can't do that. You can only adjust wing angles and tire pressure once you're in qualifying. So Chip Ganassi complained, and the two cars were then just withdrawn from qualifying. And that was kind of it for the rest of the day. And fans and drivers alike were, like, furious. The Pato Award himself said that the two cars should be forced to the back of the field, and Jacob Abel should be allowed to run as a 34th entry because his car was legal, whereas Joseph Newgarden and Will Power's cars were not. Overnight, Doug Bowles re-examined all the facts, and they went outside the normal rule books, which normally you would just assess a penalty after the race. But the Indianapolis is the most important race in the world, and you can't leave something like that up to a post-race penalty, because what if Newgarden wins from 11th or 10th? What if Will Power wins from 10th or 11th? I mean, they've won the Indy 500. Are you going to take it away from them and give it to second? What are you going to do? Because it was clearly cheating. So instead, both cars have been moved to the back of the field. Joseph Newgarden will finish 32nd, will start 32nd, and Will Power will start 33rd. On top of that, the engineer for both cars, that's Tim Sindrick, and I think Ben Bretzman is the guy for Joseph Newgarden's car, those engineers have been suspended from the Indy 500 for the second year in a row. It's crazy. The engineers were suspended last year because of another cheating scandal at the St. Pete Grand Prix last year. So, for once again, those guys are suspended. Then, on top of all that, the cars have been fined $100,000 each. And I think those penalties are very justified. I like the fact that they were decisive about it. They penalized the cars before the race because you can't let them get in the field in a good position with fast cars and win the race and then have a giant controversy of, you know, should they have deserved to be there? Does their win count? Is there an asterisk? It's just better this way. So, thankfully, they just resolved that. Moving on to our next big storyline. Dale Coyne's rather disastrous weekend. Jesus Christ, DCR, what was going on? Yet another humiliating weekend for Dale Coyne Racing. Jacob Abel, driving the number 51 Miller High Life-sponsored car, and Rinus Vike in the number 18 car, they had to bump their way into the field, and only one of them made it. Yeah, both team cars were so slow that they had to fight with each other to get in the field, and only one of them made it. It's like that scene in the Dark Knight, where the Joker breaks the pool cue in half and says, "We have an opening on our team, but only one of you," and then puts the sharp stick on the ground and says, "Make it fast," implying that one of them's got to kill the other to get in his crew. It was the same thing. It was, once again, Dale Coyne Racing was unprepared. Once again, the team was poorly managed, poorly prepared. The cars were slow. Oh my God. Rinus Vike is too good to be driving a shitbox. And yet, he's driving a tractor. A tractor that doesn't even have all of its wheels. That engine backfires every 5 seconds. Oh my God, his car was so slow. It was just unacceptably bad from both the DCR cars. So, once again, they were nowhere, they were slow, they're in the back of the field, and it's just, it ain't right. It shouldn't be this way. But, alas, Dale Coyne's going to Dale Coyne, and the poorest team on the grid is going to continue to be the poorest team on the grid. Moving on from Dale Coyne Racing, we got to talk about crashes. Oh my God, crashes. Boy, did we have several of them. Obviously, there was the ones in early practice like Christian Rasmussen and Kyle Larson, which were just whatever. But then Saturday and Sunday rolled around, and boy, we got things started off with a bang. So first of all, in the morning of Saturday, Marcus Armstrong KO'd his car. Tub destroyed, all four corners destroyed, car was a total write-off. And the Meyer Shank team had to frantically Frankenstein a road course car into an Indy 500 car using parts from Felix Rosenquist's car and Marcus Armstrong's car. And the car, when they finally got it out onto the grid for qualifying on Saturday, it had orange side pods, a jet black nose, a jet black rear wing, and a Frankenstein hodgepodge of other parts. And a car that was originally very, very fast was now very, very, very slow, and Marcus Armstrong had to bump his way into the field. And it's disappointing because Armstrong was one of the fastest guys on the track. Everyone knew he was going to be a threat for the top 10. But instead, he's going to be starting in the high 20s. It's bad. So beyond Marcus Armstrong, next was Colton Herta. Colton Herta was driving on, he was on track for his qualifying run. And in the first corner of the first lap, his car got loose and he smacked the wall and his car blew over and it skidded upside down, down the south short chute into turn two, through turn two to the exit of turn two. It was bad. The car was a total write-off. It was one of the most violent wrecks we've seen all year. It was bad, bad. And miraculously, Colton Herta's team was able to rebuild a new car, a road course car, into an Indy 500 special in like 4 hours. And they were able to get his car to the second portion of Saturday qualifying so he could get in the field. And he didn't qualify well. His car was really slow, but he managed to get in the field, which was super impressive. Then there was Scotty Mack. Scott McLaughlin. He's been the fastest man on track all weekend. So fast. And Saturday, he qualified fast enough to be in the Fast 12. And then at like 12:30 Sunday afternoon, he KO'd his car. Yeah. His car was toast, spun, smacked the wall, destroyed the car. So while Scott McLaughlin's Yellow Submarine, his number 3 Pennzoil-sponsored car, made the Fast 12, it's going to start 10th because of, well, he didn't get to make a qualifying run, so he was going to start 12th, but with the new garden and power penalties, now he'll be starting 10th. And it's worth noting that the three attenuators for the number 3 car were also impounded with the number 2 and the number 12 and studied. And the number 3, driven by Scott McLaughlin, did not have the illegal modification, so he is not being sent to the back as well. Either way, it's really disappointing because Scotty Mack had a really fast car, and we don't know what kind of shape that car is going to be in, really. I mean, it might be really fast, or it might be a heaping pile of excrement. But we just won't know. It's still, you hate to see the crashes, you really do, but we had some gnarly ones this year. And I think part of that is because the hybrid, it has changed the handling characteristics of the car. It's made the cars real hard to drive when the track isn't just like super primo perfect. So that is a thing. So moving on from crashes, Ganassi's had a disappointing Fast 12. Scott Dixon and Alex Palou both made the Fast 12. Fast cars. Really, really fast. And ultimately, Dixon's qualified 4th and Palou qualified 6th. Now, with the Penske's out of the way, in Fast 6 qualifying, I assumed that the Penske's were going to lock out the top two spots because they were really fast all week. But I don't know if they just didn't trim out enough or if the cars just didn't feel like going fast. But, man, they were not fast. Like, Polo came out and did like a 231.8 first run. We're like, whoa, where did that come from? So they just 4th and 6th. Now, and goes without saying, those are great starting spots. I mean, Dixon in 4th, Pelot in 6th, they can win the race from there. But it was shocking, to say the least, because those cars were fast. They're real, real, real fast. So, it's going to be interesting. There are fast cars further back in the field than you would normally expect. So, fireworks in play. Next, the old Samurai still got it. Takuma Sato, 48-year-old, two-time Indy 500 winner, the craziest mother licker in the field. Dude is qualified second. The only other two times he's qualified on the front row of the race, he's won the damn thing. 2017 and 2020. So, Takuma Sato driving the number 75 Rahal Letterman-Lanigan car, one of the slowest teams on the grid, is starting second. And it was an impressive run. If it wasn't for the heroics of Robert Schwartzman, Taku's run was clearly the fastest run. So it was crazy. It was so impressive. I mean, he's 48 years old, and he's still driving like his hair is on fire. So it was so good seeing him be fast. And this does create something interesting. How the front row has a Rahal and a Prema on it. If you had made that parlay bet that you would have Robert Schwartzman in first and Takuma Sato in second, you'd be a damn millionaire. You'd have had like 50,000 to 1 odds, because that's crazy. So I hope someone bet big on that, because that's crazy, crazy. Like, I saw that Robert Schwartzman's pre-race odds back on like May 15th to win the race were 20,000 to 1. If you placed a $100 bet, you're a freaking millionaire if he wins. Hell, if you'd done something like that for qualifying, you're probably very, very, very rich. So, it's crazy. It's so impressive with what Sato was able to do. I love seeing him. I've been a fan of Takuma Sato longer than I've been a fan of IndyCar racing, because I discovered him in 2005 at the U.S. Grand Prix at Indianapolis when my father took me. It was my first race ever. And, no, in 2004, what am I saying? It was in 2004. And Takuma Sato was at that race. And I was really into Godzilla at the time, so I loved everything Japanese. And Takuma Sato was the first driver I ever rooted for. And I kind of followed him to IndyCar in 2007 when I started going to the 500. And I've been a fan of his ever since. It's Takuma Sato. My fandom has always kind of circled back to him. Pato's my favorite right now, but I love Takuma Sato. He's such a crazy aggressive driver. He's the most positive, optimistic person on the grid. He's great with fans. He's great. So, really happy for Taku. All right, moving on. My boy Pato has got his best starting position ever at the 500. Qualified third. Oh yeah, he finally got that front row picture he's been wanting his entire career. He's finally got an unobstructed view of turn one at the start of the race. Ugh, it's going to be amazing. That McLaren car looked so good in qualifying. Now sadly, there were just cars that were faster than him. But man, oh man, that car was fast, fast, bad fast. So that was nice. I really enjoyed that. All right, so lastly, the last thing we got to do is let's review the starting grid for the race. This is the starting grid. Starting the race in 33rd position, we've got Penske driver Will Power. Starting in 32nd, we've got Penske driver Joseph Newgarden. Starting in 31st, we've got Dale Coyne Racing driver Rinus VK. In 30th, we've got Meyer Shank Racing driver Marcus Armstrong. In 29th position, we've got Andretti Global driver Marco Andretti, driving his 20th Indianapolis 500. In 28th position, we've got Rahal Letterman-Lanigan driver Graham Rahal. In 27th position, we've got Andretti Global driver Colton Herta. In 26th, we've got Jack Hollywood Harvey driving for the Dreyer and Reinbold team on a one-off entry. In 25th, we've got Dreyer and Reinbold driver Ryan Hunter-Reay. In 24th, we've got McLaren driver Nolan Siegel. In 23rd position, we've got Andretti Global driver Kyle Kirkwood, who I always thought was one of the favorites to get a really good top 12 qualifying spot, but he just was real slow, surprisingly. In 22nd position, we've got Meyer Shank driver and partial team owner Elio Castroneves, the four-time winner, who's seeking his fifth win. In 21st position, we've got fellow Prema driver Callum Ilott. In 20th, we've got Rahal Letterman-Lanigan driver Louis Foster in his rookie Indy 500. In 19th, we've got McLaren driver NASCAR Cup points leader Kyle Larson. In 18th, we've got Ed Carpenter Racing driver Christian Rasmussen. In 17th, we've got Juncos Hollinger driver Stingray Robb, who still has one of the best names in all of IndyCar. In 16th, we've got Rahal Letterman-Lanigan driver Devlin DeFrancesco. In 15th, we've got AJ Foyt Enterprises driver Santino Ferrucci, who had a less than stellar qualifying effort. In 14th, we've got Ed Carpenter Racing owner Ed Carpenter. In 13th, we've got Chip Ganassi Racing driver Kiffin Simpson. In 12th, we've got Ed Carpenter Racing driver Alexander Rossi. In 11th, we've got Juncos Hollinger driver Connor Daly. All who have been up, who have been elevated into the top 12. In 10th, we've got Penske driver Scott McLaughlin. The Thirsty Threes hoping to recover from their crash and get a win. In 9th, we've got Andretti Global driver Marcus Ericsson. In 8th, we've got McLaren driver Christian Lundgaard. In 7th, we've got AJ Foyt Enterprises driver David Malukas. Lil Dave hoping to make his mark on the 500 after missing it last year with an injury. In 6th, we've got Mr. Perfect himself, that damn Spaniard, driving for Chip Ganassi Racing, Alex Palou, who's our points leader. Ugh. In 5th, we've got Meyer Shank driver Felix Rosenquist. Rosie was very, very fast over the weekend, and he's got a good starting spot. In 4th, we've got the GOAT, the best IndyCar driver of all time, driving for Chip Ganassi Racing, Scott Dixon. In 3rd, we've got Pato Ward driving for Arrow McLaren IndyCar team. In 2nd, we've got Rahal Letterman-Lanigan driver Takuma Sato, whose slogan is, no attack, no chance. And starting first on the pole in his first ever oval race, Robert Schwartzman, the rookie. All right, so that's it for my recap of qualifying. My predictions from last week were pretty good. They weren't great, but they were pretty good. I missed on the Alex Palou one, but I'm pretty happy with some of my other predictions. Either way, later today I'm also going to release a prediction, my final predictions for the Indy 500. I'm going to predict the top 10 finishers. I'm going to predict the top finishing rookie, the winner, make some other bold predictions. That'll be coming out later today after the final practice session finishes this afternoon. All right. So thank you all for listening so much. I appreciate it. This is a kind of a later episode today. So if you're listening on podcast, thank you. I really appreciate it. We're hard to find. So spread the word. Help us grow the podcast. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, share the word. If you're watching on YouTube, please consider subscribing, like, comment, hit the bell notification, help the channel grow. We've got 7 whole subscribers on YouTube right now. So please hit the subscribe button. All right. My name is H. James K. Thank you all for tuning in. Until next time.